Hello and welcome to this edition of Club Chronicles, a series of interviews with club members who have some interesting stories to tell relating in some way to our 150th anniversary, which you will know is taking place this year, 2024. Today, I'm very pleased to welcome members who will be very well known to many of you, Pete and Joan Chadwick. Both have been very active in many ways, both on and off various committees. But let's start at the beginning. I know you came to Cheltenham almost by chance after retiring from a distinguished career in the RAF, but knew nobody in Cheltenham. But you both love the town. So, starting with you, Pete, looking back, tell us how you and Joan came to join the new club nearly 20 years ago, I think.
Yes, it was early 2005. We moved into Grace Gardens, next door but one to John Austin, who obviously saw me coming, because very shortly after that he invited us to come down to the club, and very shortly after that he suggested I might become assistant secretary.
Oh.
Which happened within
3 weeks.
3 weeks of the first visit.
That was very fortuitous for the club, I might say so. Do you recall who was the chairman of the committee at that time, and mention any other names you remember from that time? Because we're talking 20 years ago.
The committee, the chairman was David Mason. The secretary was
Ian Dunbar,
who I was his assistant. But very, very shortly, I was no longer the assistant, I was the secretary. You can read between the lines there. Neville Whitfield was the treasurer. John Austin was then on the committee. And Helen Landau was on the committee. And I'm just trying to think of any of the others.
Was Dr. Rogers, GP?
No, he'd left the committee previously.
Peter, those are names many members actually remember who were very keen on a connection with horse racing in Cheltenham?
Indeed, yes. Well, David Mason and Ian Dunbar and Neville Whitfield formed part of a syndicate who owned a couple of horses that they owned, a leg or a forelock or whatever.
Yes.
So it wasn't a horse ownership. Anyway, they were big racers and they used to take their wives with them. And the girls one day decided they wanted to create a horse-owning syndicate, which they did. They bought a horse and they were asked what to call it, and they decided to call it Beat the Boys, which was slightly...
a nice bit of
yeah,
feminism
in fact,
at that stage.
It did very well. And in fact, I think if you look on the fireplace down in the bar, I think it's still there, there is actually one of the horse prizes that it won when it won a race.
At that time, we also had a box at the race course, didn't we, which was very, very popular.
We did. In fact, we had two boxes. The reason we had it is because way back in the 1900s, the club actually helped bankroll the formation of the race course. And as a result, we were allowed to have these two boxes. We had them at a... well, it wasn't quite a peppercorn rent, but it was quite small, advantageous, that's right. But they decided eventually to build what they have now, the enormous great grandstand, and knocked the boxes down, sadly. And of course we now have the race table within the new grandstand. Not quite so effective as the boxes that we had.
It's still very popular, I understand.
Oh yes, yeah.
Still popular.
Yeah.
So back to your involvement in running the club. As far as the committee was concerned, you were definitely roped in to become the official secretary of the club. And a great way to get to know who's who in the club probably at that time. So when, for instance, did you first become chairman? I know that was a little while later, but when was that?
Yes, I was secretary from 2005 and I became chairman in 2011 for 3 years. And then handed my cards over and retired, or so I thought.
Well, at fairly early on, there was our first lady chair.
Oh, in fact.
That was Anne Glowry.
Indeed.
So what dates was it when you first became a chair and then a trustee and then again a chair? Can you recall those dates?
Well, I was chair from 11 to 13. 3 years inclusive. I had a rest for a while, and then I was invited to become a trustee, and then handed that over, and then became chairman again in 2020, just before COVID hit us.
And what did you do during COVID? Was it all locked down, as everywhere else was?
Yes, yes. Well, we closed the club to members, obviously, because we were not able to open at all. We furloughed all of the staff except Lynn and Carl. And Lynn and Carl set up a takeaway meal system, frozen, so that people could come along, get meals, take them away, or we would deliver them. We were always quite keen on not being stopped by the police, because we weren't supposed to be out and about in those days, if you remember. But we issued cards saying we're on a humanitarian activity and thought we would get away with it. In fact, we were never actually challenged at all.
So you were really a Meals on Wheels service?
Yes, Meals on Wheels, yeah.
And it was very popular.
Including the ladies, Mario and Sue and Joan, of course, were helping out in that.
You were involved with that as well, weren't you, Joan?
Oh, yes, yes, very much so. We delivered mostly to the very elderly initially, because we were quite worried about them. But then it just seemed to expand. We seemed to be delivering to, 20, 30 a day. And Sue and I were the people who jumped in and out of the cars all the time. So,
well, it was,
yeah, it was quite
very
exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a very well-received service, I know. But let's hark back a little bit. Can you sum up how different the club is today from not just COVID time, but before that? What's the biggest change you've noticed?
I think right from the word go, the change has been that people use the club less on a casual basis. They only come into the club, this is not universal, but a tendency, they only come into the club for specific activities like Pilates or bridge or an evening talk or whatever, whereas hitherto it had been, well, let's pop into the club for a drink, or, oh, look, we might meet someone in the club and it'd be nice to have a chat. More casual use of the club.
So what was it like before? Did they come in more formally, or did they come in for business
lunches,
or what?
This was more before our time, I think, but certainly people would pop in for a drink after work.
Yeah.
There were quite a few still members still working in business around Imperial Square and so on. And there was a sort of tea time drinking session, one might call it.
What's the story? I heard somebody called Winky Farr.
Winky Farr.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit
about
Winky
Farr. Yes, yeah. Well, for a short period we didn't have, we lost a member of staff, and I was running the bar, because we opened on Saturdays in those days, and I was running the bar, and the bar in those days was completely separate from the ladies' coffee lounge. And we used to have a bunch of old boys who sat around the bar and did their Saturday lunchtime thing. And some more elderly ladies used to sit in the coffee bar and didn't have coffee, had drinks served by me. And Wink Farr, who's no longer with us, sadly, called me boy.
Because she was serving behind the bar. And
indeed, and I was a little bit younger than she was.
But also, the smoking ban came in about that time as well, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, the club was a no-smoking area as we arrived, but Winky, for instance, was a really heavy, inveterate smoker, and she used to go out and sit on the decking at the back of the club to have a cigarette while she was having the drinks in the ladies' coffee lounge.
So there were fewer ex-military men and women in the club at that time, is that right? Or there were more business people?
But there were quite a few military, because this was a place where the military retired to, Cheltenham, I mean. So quite a few, but it is now quite a lot less now. I think there's about two or three of us now, and no more than that.
So in a way, it was at that time, round about that, we really had to adapt the way in which we ran the club. But that sounds like a perfect, thank you, Pete, that sounds like a perfect moment to bring Joan into the conversation. Joan, you've always been a bit of a mover and shaker, and have some very interesting stories to tell about the way that the culture within the club was changing around that time. What were your first impressions when you joined the club?
Well, I think if you look back at our history, our social life has always tended to be the mess, the military. And when Chad retired from the military, the one thing I said is we'll never be in one of these clubs where men have privileges.
Okay.
Just sound a bit. So that kind of lays the rules. However, I was surprised. The club was very different then. It was a club for successful people, particularly successful men and their wives. And wives would quite happily sit in the coffee lounge and have their coffee and their drinks. And the men would be in the bar. And this wasn't just wasn't here. I found the women felt the same in Bath. They had the same kind of feelings about men and privileges within the club. I'm a North Country girl. That kind of privilege, you have to work for it. So it didn't sit too happily with me in the beginning.
So it was a bit of a shock to find that the ladies were discouraged from using the main bar.
Yeah, by the ladies, not by the men.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah,
that's
it was the ladies that...
Tell me the story, I mean, give me some idea. Were you responsible for opening up the bar for ladies? Or how did that all happen?
No.
Because it was round about that time that ladies were started to be admitted to the bar in their own right. Because after all, they were members in their own right.
Yes. There was one little entrance. Where the telephone in the bar is now, that little entrance was there. The one at the top by the French doors wasn't. So you only had that end. And I came, the first time Chad brought me into the place for a drink, Elaine Mary was our manageress then, and I asked for my drink. And, she said, well, okay, Mr. Chadwick, if you go and sit down in the ladies' room, I'll bring it in. And I said, no, I'm sorry, I'll have it here at the bar. And she said, oh. I said, okay. But anyway, I sat there, and she put the drink down and then disappeared. And then there's a little bit of murmuring in the coffee lounge, and one of the members, who I won't give a name to because she's still a member, came out and said, it wasn't the done thing. Ladies didn't drink in the bar, it was the men's privilege. And I just made it clear that I wasn't happy with that. I paid the same membership as every men paid. So if they wanted to segregate me and exclude me from various parts of the building, they could reduce my membership. Otherwise, I was drinking in the bar.
Ah.
And that's how it started.
Joan, you were very definitely an early feminist, agitating, perhaps that's too strong a word, for equal rights, but it was about equal rights. You were full members after all, and you hadn't been used to this sort of segregation, which was apparent in the club, not just in our club, but generally speaking, when it came to social occasions.
Yeah.
So there was a more of a physical, as Peter said, a physical opening up of the bar around that time, and I'm sure that you were involved in some way in making that work, that ladies would start to feel that the bar was part of where they had.
Well, I did have a little birthday celebration with some of my female friends in the bar the following Saturday. But I have to stress, the men were not at all bothered. It wasn't the men that were complaining. It was the women that were encouraging this kind of sex. It was really odd and something that didn't sit too well. But it soon changed. I bought the men a drink, a birthday drink. So they joined the party.
Ah. So there was a lot going on at that time as far as the ladies and the men all coming, joining together. But also there was, as Peter's already mentioned, the opening up of the bar by, the way I describe it, is knocking down a wall so that you could walk straight into the bar rather than having to go through the coffee lounge first. So I think you were also involved in in the development of the bar and the decorations and how it should look?
Well, I was involved, but I wasn't necessarily the leader of everything. I mean, I was quite a doer. But, I mean, if you think just before we got there, Chris Wiseman and Penny Wiseman and the Jenkins had done a lot to the club already. They'd been members about 10 years before we got there, and they changed the bar and whatever. But there were other things that needed doing, and we did get involved. But I think one of the big movers and shakers of that time was the house chair, who was Di Fletcher. And it was Di Fletcher that got me involved, and it was then we would get into groups and we'd choose paints and change curtains and paint walls. And you were part of that. You came in on our group a couple of times, painting walls. Did you not, Mary?
I did.
I tended to be there. I would probably do a lot of the running around and whatever else. But I think the big mover and shaker at that time was Di Fletcher.
But you were particularly known for the maintenance of the building, and I think that was for many years after that. It wasn't just at that time, but you had that role for a number of years, didn't
you? Yeah, and I think that happened from the Di Fletcher connection. We had two people we'd employed in the club. There was Sadie and Reg Powell. He was our handyman, Sadie was our cleaner, and did a lot of stuff around. And it was Reg Powell, as our regular handyman, who did nearly every job that Di and I wanted doing, like changing radiators, like repairing window sills, like any odd job that could be done in the house, he was on call. So without...
So with Di and Reg available, the three of us, to you, yeah. You really did.
Yes,
you did move on.
Yeah.
But let's just move now forward to the ladies' flowers rota.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know whether you started it or it was already started.
It's one of those things that I just fall into. It's always somebody else's job, and they either move or I take it on. Jean Gayen was the flower lady at the time, and it was a totally different system then. Flowers were much more important to the club. There was a group of about 10, this was in 2005, I think, there was a group of about 10 of us. Jean Gayen ran it. We met once a week, this group. Helen Landau was one of our ladies as well, and Peggy Maggs. And we'd meet upstairs in what is now the conference room. We'd all bring greenery. Jean would have bought the flowers. And we all used to make a singular flower arrangement for every table.
Ooh, so how every many tables was that?
That was 10 in the dining room, mm-hmm, and one in the lobby.
Okay.
So there'd be a big one in the lobby, and every table had its own little flower arrangement on, not just a little vase with a flower in. They were... arrangements.
Yeah, yeah. And I know you're still involved with the Flower Rota team.
Yeah, yeah. Today. Well, yeah. Jane then passed on the paperwork when she realised that I could do rotas and whatnot on the computer. And it just kind of moved from me taking notes on the computer to undoing the rota to Jane just kind of shrinking back. Mm.
Well, I think you've done a great deal for the club over the years. As you also spent some time on the committee as well. Both you and Pete have been real supporters of the club. I remember you also were involved in the buddy system, which you introduced. What was that all about?
Yeah, it's very hard. I was very aware that we'd get new members in, and if they didn't have a sponsor, we'd lose them very quickly, because they'd quite often come in the club and people just wouldn't say hello. So I felt if we had someone who was aware of every new member and could just befriend them for 2 months or so, till they settled in and knew other members, we might keep them.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that it does. It's just saying hello and introducing them to
others. It's really worked, and it still exists today, which is tremendous and part of the spirit of the club. So finally, can I ask you both, starting with Pete, what has the new club meant to you during your time in Cheltenham?
Socially, just about everything. We moved into the house we're living in now and knew absolutely no one in the area. It was friendly, but it certainly wasn't a social circle. And our social circle over the last 20 years has been the club.
Yeah.
And without it, I think we would have not had a successful social life.
Yeah.
Or it wouldn't have come so quickly.
And Joan, what do you want to add to that, or you feel very similar
to
Pete?
No, exactly similar views. I mean, we moved to Cheltenham knowing no one. If it hadn't been for moving next door to the Austens and being introduced to the new club, this was our intro to Cheltenham, and all our friends have always been part of the new club.
I think it says something about the new club and how important it can become to people individually and together. So thank you so much, Pete and Joan, for your reflections on nearly 20 years of membership. Thank you.
Thank you.
Pleasure.